Hey, Craig, are we good? Are we good, Craig? Are we recording?
Give us a thumbs up. No, that's not a thumb. All right.
That doesn't need to be out. Yeah. Anyway.
I was going with middle finger. Why did you go with penis?
What? I was talking about his shoes were off.
Right, sure. All right, jeez. I'm Grumpy Dungeon Master Christopher. This is Grumpy
Dungeon
Master
Jay. I thought you were Grumpy Dungeon Master ChatGPT.
No, we'll talk about that in a little bit.
No, we won't.
Okay, you want me to start off with that?
No, we just won't talk about it at all.
Well, that's my topic for the night.
Oh, no.
We did
a long episode. Well, I wouldn't say a long episode.
We did an episode
that was a lot of ChatGPT, and then we did another episode where you just kept reading ChatGPT.
And this the first thing I want to talk about is an article that came out of PC Gamer that was about a tweet from Paizo, pretty much just asking what their opinion of ChatGPT and AI art was, and they actually put out an official statement. I'll go ahead and read it here. It says, Paizo and Artificial Intelligence. Over the last few months, the world has seen a huge upsurge in interest, use, and quality of algorithm-generated imagery and text. Since we launched the company in 2002, Paizo has made its reputation with the assistance of countless traditional artists and writers, who are just as integral to the success of our games as our in-house editors, art directors, designers, and developers. The ethical and legal issues surrounding AI art, quote-unquote, and the writing prompt programs and the serious threat they pose to the livelihood of partners who have helped us get to where we are today as a company demand that we take a firm position against the use of technology in Paizo's products. In the coming day, Paizo will add new language to its creative contracts that stipulate that all work submitted for us for publication be created by a human. We will further add guidance to our Pathfinder and Starfinder Infinite Program FAQs clarifying that AI-generated content is not permitted on either community content marketplace. Our customers expect a human touch to our releases, and so long as the ethical and legal circumstances surrounding these programs remain murky and undefined, we are unwilling to associate our brand with the technology in any way. Stated plainly, when you buy a Paizo product, you can be sure that it is the work of a human professionals who have spent years honing their craft to produce the best work we can. Paizo will not use AI-generated, quote-unquote, creative work of any kind in the foreseeable future. We thank the human artists and writers who have been so integral to our success in the past, and we look forward to working with them for many years to come. So that's the Paizo response. And the article was pretty much about that as well. And I'll get into that later. First, yeah. I want to read the WOTC response. AI-generated content.
I was going to expect that you would have one. And yeah. Can I say what it's going to say? Because I have no idea what it's actually going to say. But
sure.
My thoughts on it are, so we will not use AI-generated blah, blah. Wait a minute. You mean we don't have to pay people? We don't have to pay people. So everything going forward will now be generated by AI. That's my expected response by WOTC.
Oh, it gets even better. Okay, so the tweet sent out last Thursday by WOTC is as follows. Okay, so what I want you to do there is to insert sounds of crickets chirping.
Oh, okay. So they just have no response.
There's not a single. I mean, the WOTC development team is hard at work in 6th edition, and you know they did just make everything in Creative Commons, so they probably don't care. It's not an issue for them.
Sure. Yeah.
As a big company, they probably can use AI art and get away with it. Hell, they use the Pathfinder Mind Devourer in their Dungeons and Dragons art.
Yep.
For the movie, and got away with it. So, I kind of feel like they probably will try to make use of it in the future, but they just don't care at this point in time. They're developing a new system and a new game, and if the rumors of that they want things to be more AI driven is true, let them work on that. Let them work on the problem. on how to make it ethical or not ethical or whatever for future use for by creators. I'm glad Paizo is taking the stance. To me, it seems unnecessary because
it is necessary.
Okay. Right? How is it necessary?
It is necessary specifically so that they can put it in their contracts that you can't use AI generated blah, blah, blah. So if they hire somebody and then 6 months down the road, find out this person used AI to generate this art, at that point, that person, they've broken their contract. They can do what they, you know, at that point, legalese gets into it.
Right. So I understand adding it to the contracts. What I guess I don't understand is why the public show of it. Are they just trying to get more favor from the community that they already have?
Probably.
Did they miss it? Because I personally don't care. Okay, it's great that you're doing that, but why should I care? And I understand why I should care because, you know, it is still a very questionable thing, but my why should I care comes like, why are you making a big deal out of this? It's great. You know, thumbs up to you and your company for doing this. You don't gain any more substance from me. And the fact that that common creators can't use AI generated art in their work is kind of sad. That's not a requirement for DM's Guild at this time. And if I were to basically publish something, I would look at AI generated art. I mean, we talked about that. I got that cool slime monster that you can see in our Discord. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'll use that image. You know, it's free for me to use that. It's copyright to me because it was artificially generated. And I understand there's some legalese battles behind it, but
yeah, a lot of it's just sort of gray territory at the moment.
Yeah.
I appreciate Paizo just going out ahead of everybody and being like, hey, we're not using this stuff. You know, if somebody else wants to, they did. Like, obviously, they're not poking or prodding anybody to not use it, but they as a company are just straight up saying, we're using humans. Humans are what matter, not the AI generated stuff.
But no one was asking them for a comment.
Well, obviously, PC Gamer wrote a piece on it, so they were expecting something.
I get maybe so. What was interesting about the PC Gamer piece was actually less about the Paizo comment and more about a science fiction magazine. Let me find the. So it's a sci-fi and fantasy magazine called Clark's World. So for those of you who are younger and listen to our podcast, a magazine is kind of like a book, but it's made of shiny paper and it's given to you every month. So it has stuff on the inside that you can read like a blog.
You can actually still buy these regularly and still get subscriptions.
Mostly in airports.
Airports, bookstores. Most bookstores still have magazine racks.
There's no more bookstores.
Really? I go to them every week, multiple bookstores.
Well, you're in Alabama, so you're kind of a little bit, you know, behind the times.
Well, I'm actually I'm heading to Raleigh, which is definitely up with the times, and my plan is to visit two different bookstores while I'm there.
They're closed.
No, they aren't. Well, they might be at this hour on a Sunday, but.
Actually, so here in Charleston, all the bookstores close except for one Books a Million and a Barnes and Noble that's in like the hoity-toity rich area of Charleston called West Ashley.
Yeah, so you have two bookstores in your.
So we have two bookstores. We have one Barnes and Nobles and one cheaper one. We actually went there this week. This weekend we went to P.F. Chang's. But anyways,
How's your asshole?
I didn't get what I ordered.
Oh. And
it was really weird. I ordered the Wagyu steak.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, the what? It's like the Wagyu steak. And I pointed it at the little menu. The Wagyu steak.
Why do?
She's like, oh, okay. So then she brings me the pepper steak. And I didn't realize until halfway through eating it that it was not the thing that I ordered. Yet. I was so hungry. You had no idea.
And it was a steak.
It was delicious, so kind of irrelevant to me. It's like, good food. Anyways, we went to Barnes and Nobles, and I'll actually get to that a little bit later. So Clarksburg is a sci-fi and fantasy magazine. I've never heard of them
either.
But it's cool that they have a magazine that they put out every month.
What's it about?
Science fiction and fantasy.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all I know about it. Anyways, there was a link to another article by PC Gamer where this magazine had to halt submissions due to a flood of stories written by AI chatbots. And the best part about it, there's a graph that they had going from June 2019 to February 2023. February 20th, 2023. And that's just, and it needs to happen because they gave two graphs, one for February 15th and one was for February 20th. So when you look at the graph, it has a month breakdown for all of from June to the new year. And you can kind of see like there's some like some little blips that pop up in the bar graph. Well, the bar graph, what it shows is the amount of AI submitted plagiaristic works that they have caught. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so you're not looking for anything more than maybe 5 to 25 at the highest up until December of 2022, where they break 50 submissions just out of nowhere. And then in January 2023, there are over 100 submissions.
Jeez.
So on February 13th or February 15th, 2023, the amount of submissions they caught were just under 350. And then in 5 days, they are over 500 submissions to this magazine for, hey, here's my short story that I wrote. Please publish it and get this some money from us. So I can understand why they don't want to have AI works for their magazine.
Yeah.
But
yeah, because
it's going to be really hard to not like just have all that mobile magazine just everywhere just be AI generated eventually.
Yeah, I just took kind of a look at what Clark's World is. So even like before my time, there were these kind of sci-fi magazines, and it's effectively a bunch of short stories that have been thrown out. And a lot of it is to kind of find new sci-fi writers and give good sci-fi writers a platform, most of them who are not, you know, big names. And sometimes you get big name writers who will write in things like this. So I'm imagining that the vast majority of the people who are in this Clark's World magazine, and I'm looking at the names for the ones in the current issue. I've never heard of any of them, but they're writers who are,
yeah,
who are trying to break out and trying to actually get book deals and, you know, become something in this, in that industry. So yeah, having to even compete with AI is just a pain in the ass. Like these people are writing, they're putting their heart and souls into what they're creating. And then you have all these jackoffs who are just like, ah, give me 35 seconds and I'll write something.
Yeah. I mean, obviously they have some kind of standard for catching this plagiaristic AI generated content, or as they one of caught so many.
Yeah.
Go ahead. My guess is that, you know, they'll definitely have to be updating their terms and service. Makes me wonder, though, like, is Paizo having that problem? That's why they came out and said that.
Oh, it seems likely, yeah.
But then again, I hired all the artists for all the artwork that wasn't allowed for me to use freely. And from what I mean by that is, like, there's a lot of D&D artwork from 4th edition that's free to use for your DM's Guild content. Mm-hmm. And I use that a lot. So that's free for me to use. There's also, you know, free artwork out there by artists who let you just use their stuff. If you ask, they'll let you use it. But all the original pieces that I've used, I've paid for the license to use them. And or I've just, you know, been able to hire my own artist to do something for me. So I don't understand why I can't also use AI art for my work. Now, I wouldn't want to use AI writing programs because, you know, that's like my lifeblood. That's what I want. You know, I want to be a actual published, legitimate, you know.
I think you've just answered. RPG. I think you've just answered why you can't use the art. You answered your own quandary right there.
And maybe I did. But like, it's just to me, like the art for things, like, okay, if I need an art piece, I can generate a fake one and then give it to, you know, an artist and say, hey, I want something like this.
Sure. But that's not actually using it for your product. That's using it to push the artist. Because trying to tell an artist exactly what you want can be difficult. But if you can kind of show them, that's a little easier.
Yeah. But like, if I want to use that slime monster, I don't see why I can't use that slime monster, you know?
Yeah.
Because to me, it's just like, it's just another little thing. You know, maybe someone could draw a better slime monster for me, but like, I'm really happy with that one. So yeah, why would I want to?
It's the issue of keeping, you know, people employed. Like, artists work hard for you know, it takes decades to get the skills to do really high level art. Same thing for writers. And the community wants to keep that going. You know, I don't think long term that's going to be sustainable. I think within, you know, 30 years or so, everything we're even discussing here is going to be a moot point because AI is going to do everything.
Yeah. I mean, you saw the animated thing that the Corridor Crew did. I mean, like, that's just 2 months of their work and they've developed full-fledged animation.
And it was good animation too.
Yeah. So it's like, I understand there's a need for tool. I wouldn't want to pay an artist and get AI work straight back from them, you know? Oh,
yeah, absolutely.
So it's so weird. Like, I put art and writing kind of differently, but then again, if I am creating a bunch of backstories and I don't want to sit there and create 1,000 backstories, I can generate 1,000 backstories and, you know, modify, tweak them, clean them up a little bit so that they actually fit.
The one thing I can say about this, sorry, is that it is going to make physical art more valuable.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So, you know, like there are a lot of people who do computer art, and me personally, some of it's, I have my own preference. Some of it's all right, but I've always been a big fan of, you know, Larry Elmore and Clive Caldwell and their art, because those guys sat there with paints and brushes and made something. Yeah. And I am not shitting on digital artists, because that is its own skill set. But because of AI art that's coming out, you're not going to be able to sustain as a digital artist long term. But a physical artist, as long as you have people willing to pay for what you make, you're good.
Yeah. It's definitely this weird hole we've kind of like worked ourselves into as a society.
Yeah. You ever see the movie WALL-E?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure you have. It's just that idea, as AI progresses, as we get better robotics and so forth, like, everything is going to be just sort of handed to us. And this is, you know, a couple hundred years down the road. I don't think it's that quick. But at some point, if we continue to progress down this path that we're starting to see long term, we're not going to create anything. We're not going to have to do anything. Everything will become automated. Humanity will probably not really have much purpose for existing. It's very dystopian long term.
I mean, when you put it that way, yeah.
It is. It's very dystopian. There have been plenty of writers over the years who have written these, you know, these stories that we are just now starting to get into. So, good luck, humanity.
I was rooting for you. You're doing really good until the end and the robots took over.
Yep. But hey, on the bright side, you know, if we follow down the path of Dune, well, then in 10,000 years, humanity will be a feudal society that has no thinking machines. Yep.
But I want to think. I don't want to eat the slug butt people stuff.
It won't matter. You won't be here.
Yeah,
and neither,
I will.
And neither will I.
Dude, I'm going to take in so much spice, I'm going to be one of the slug butt people.
Oh, okay. You're going to be a navigator, just folding space and time at a whim.
I already can do that with my my wife and my child. Whenever I rip one, they're like, oh, God, time has stopped for us.
I've been playing, I went back and started playing South Park, The Stick of Truth.
Another great Obsidian game.
Yes, yes. I had never really played much of it previously, but just when Cartman starts teaching you magic, and it's effectively just him teaching you how to fart on people.
Yeah.
That game is so good.
When you develop your own RPG, the main component that you need to develop first is like the magic system. Because everything else falls into place. Farting as a magic system is a genius move.
Yep.
No, that game is actually really good. I mean, if you like South Park, you know, you'll probably like it, but it's a really good RPG when you get down to it.
Yeah, I had only ever played a few hours of it previously. I was scrolling through games trying to find something new because I was a little bored, and I saw that the second South Park game was on sale. I was like, well, I could buy it, or I can go back and play the one I never actually finished. So,
yeah, the second one's a tactical game, and it's not the turn-based style that the first one was. Hmm. So I didn't like it.
That's fair.
Maybe it passed for me. It was not done by Obsidian either.
Oh, okay. I didn't actually know that.
Yeah, it's done by a different company. So, like, yeah, Obsidian, man, they make such great games. Some of the best RPGs are made by them. But then, like, they turn around and, like, just get shafted after every great game. And then they're like, fine, we'll develop our own game with blackjack and hookers. And then it's just so kind of like, meh. It's really kind of bewildering. Okay, so, like, they made Fallout.
I'm scrolling through the list of games because I honestly had no idea what they had made. And just going to their website and scrolling through, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There's 16 games on the main page, and I've probably played 2/3 of them.
Yeah. So, like, they made Fallout New Vegas. And then they were like, okay, well, fine. You don't want to hire us for the next game. That's fine. We'll make our own Fallout-style game. So they made that New World game, whatever it was.
Uh-huh. Outer Worlds. And,
yeah, Outer Worlds, yeah.
Which was a great game.
And it was not.
Yeah, it was. I loved
it. Not when you compare it to Fallout New Vegas.
I played through both of them, so I enjoyed both of them.
One is like this open world where like anything can happen. You can do anything you want. And then you play Outer World. You're like, you must go to point B. All right. Now that you're at point B, go to point A again. I'm just like,
yeah, but you could also do the 8 million other side quests that were involved in that, which I did.
Yeah. I didn't like it.
Yeah. To each their own. You know, everybody has their preference in games, which is why we're going to get back on talking tabletop games, because that's what this podcast mostly is.
You have a podcast?
I know, amazing. Why are you looking at me, Craig? You shut up. So I got to play Dark Souls, the tabletop role-playing game, this weekend.
Okay. How many times did you die?
It is as awesome as we could have hoped.
Okay.
I will get to how many times I died before this story is over, but I have to I have to kind of explain how Dark Souls works. So it is fifth edition in all aspects. It's you got your character, you get your class, you get your level. There are no races. They do something else. I think it's called Origin, and there are four origins to pick from. There's the Brute, the Fencer, Jack of all trades, and the caster. And when you pick this, it actually sets your stats for you. So there's no rolling for your strength, dex, con, any of that. It's whichever of these origins you picked, those are the stats you get. And it also gives you bloodied effects. So if I'm picking the brute, which is what I ended up playing, and I get bloodied, I immediately get +3 to my armor class. I get 2 points of damage resistance, and I get advantage on strength checks and saves. And okay. every one of them gets some awesome effect like that. So when going through character creation, you also have the, you know how with D&D, you've got your goals and your fault, your flaws is whatever they call it, those three things that actually have no effect or bearing on the game at all.
Yeah.
All right. Well, in this one, they have backstories, memories, and drives, which are effectively the same thing, but they actually have mechanical purpose for the game.
Okay.
So I ended up rolling mine just randomly. And my backstory was of all the ancient knights of Lothric needed squires. You were one, tending to their weapons and armor, waiting your chance to become a knight yourself. Then I rolled my memories, and the memory that I have is the screams and chaos of a bandit raid, running, arrows flickering past you. And then my drive was to save the world, whatever is left of it. So as these were the things that I rolled randomly, and mind you can pick them, but I wanted to do it just sort of random. Everything mm-hmm. screamed that I was a knight who died in a bandit raid. And with Dark Souls, you end up coming back from the dead. Effectively, you are some type of an undead. And yes. For me, it was to save the world, whatever is left of it. So I'm a knight who's trying to save the world. I am lawful stupid. They don't actually use alignment, but that's effectively the character I was playing. So with those backstory, memory, and drives, once per long rest, you can invoke each of these character elements to gain a specific mechanical benefit. If you invoke your backstory, it allows you to roll with advantage on one saving throw of your choice. Invoking your memory lets you roll with advantage on one check of your choice, and invoking your drive allows you to reroll one failed check or saving throw of any kind.
That's interesting.
I'm a fan of it. The DM does not have to accept you invoking it. You have to make it actually make sense. So like with my drive, it's to save the world. If I get, if whatever they attacked me with was going to kill me, I could potentially say, no, I must save this world. I'm invoking my drive. And then he might allow me another saving throw.
So, okay.
Yeah, kind of a really cool element, and I'm glad that they actually gave a purpose to that. So let's see. Yeah, the brute, which is what I did. Like I said, it gives you your stats, give you your bloodied effects. Brute is basically your fighter type class. Your hit points are based on the origin. So I had D10 hit points plus con modifier. One thing that's very, very cool about this system, and at first we were really concerned with it, but it actually turned out to be kind of awesome. Every time you level up, you do not get extra hit points. You just get your con modifier. That's it. So you're always going to have kind of low hit points. But when you go into combat, as soon as your turn starts, you immediately gain whatever your hit die is, times your level in hit points. So at second level, I effectively was running around with 33 hit points, which sounds like a lot, but they've added another thing in this, and they actually don't call them hit points. They call it position. And position is a fucking resource that you can spend to do things, as well as it's your hit points. And there is no, when you hit zero, you're getting back up, you can get healed. No, when you hit zero, you're dead, because this is Dark Souls. but you can spend, you're able to spend 5 points minimum to do 5 extra damage on an attack. And for every point over that you spend, you could do more damage. There's things that if you spend points, you can get extra saves. Possibly rerolls to checks. Like there's a whole gamut of things you can do by spending your hit points.
Okay.
All right. So then all of the equipment that you have, and everybody starts with equipment just like in the video game. And they were very meticulous with this. They were trying to make this like the video game. So I started with a long sword, knight armor, and a knight shield. as well as everybody starts with an Estus flask, which is effectively like three healing potions that resets every time you take a long rest.
Yeah.
So my long sword, I could spend one position to get two extra damage. My armor, it just gave me minus one to my dex score, which kind of sucked. And the shield, once per long rest, I could use it to give myself plus three armor class. Or, sorry, plus four armor class. So okay. I'm starting out, I have a 17 AC. At second level, I'm running around 33 hit points. We did start at first, but we got to second really quick. And I have a 17 armor class, and once per fight, I can go up to a 21 AC. And then if I get bloodied, I would effectively be a 24 armor class at second level, which sounds fucking stupid. So anyway, this is Dark Souls. We'd gone through a few fights. We'd won because these were mooks. And then we fight our first difficult monster. And we actually got it by surprise. And there were a party of five of us. We had a pyromancer, a sorcerer, the equivalent of a paladin. They're called heralds. Myself, and then an archer rogue. And we fucked this thing up for two straight rounds. And it's this giant, like not giant, but it's large crystal lizard. So I'm up meleeing with this thing, and it jumps off the wall. And I've been spending my hit points effectively to get in more damage and do other things to this thing. So I'm at mid-20s in hit points, and it jumps off the wall and hits me for 11 damage. I make my strength save, so I'm not knocked prone. At that point, I'm sitting at 15 hit points or so. I'm like, okay, it doesn't hit that hard. It's almost dead. We're fucking this thing up. We're about to win. Then it gets its next full turn. And there are three of us in melee with this thing. So one thing this thing could do was take four melee attacks in a round. So it swings at me first. I activate my shield. I've got a 21 armor class. I'm thinking to myself, okay, I'm fucking good. No, it hits me for 28 damage with my 15 hit points left. So as this is Dark Souls, I am now dead. It then proceeds to kill the other two people that were in melee with it. Dark Souls, okay, the tabletop role-playing game, has a mechanic in it that if half of your team is killed, rounded down. If half of your team is killed, you lose. Everybody dies.
Okay.
So effectively, we wipe on our first difficult monster. But as is Dark Souls, you can respawn back at the bonfire. So when you respawn, you roll a wisdom saving throw, DC 18. If you fail that saving throw, you then have to roll on their chart to see what effects take place. And it's basically you roll a D20, and depending on what you roll, something will happen. I rolled a 4, I think it was, which... basically, it gave me minus one permanently to my passive perception. Okay, that's fine. A couple other people roll. One of them actually made their wisdom save. Muffin, he actually rolled, got a benefit, if I remember right. And then the other two people both rolled nat ones. Which is, you're dead. Make a new character.
Okay, so straight dead, okay.
Straight dead. So our first introduction to fucking Dark Souls is exactly like Dark Souls. It's you're fucked, make a new character, which is fantastic. It's what I've been dreaming of. It's what I wanted.
Okay.
There are some issues with the game. It is not balanced by any means, I have no doubt. And it's not even that the monsters are unbalanced, because that's intentional, but the classes are not balanced either. So our buddy Jacob ended up playing a pyromancer, and the pyromancer gets three kind of like firebolt spells per day, or per, okay, you know, per long rest or short rest. I don't remember, but he gets three. So my other buddy Johnny made a sorcerer. He had 15 magic missiles and I think 9 of some other spell. So 3 if you play a pyromancer, and like 20 something if you play a sorcerer.
Okay.
not exactly balanced there.
And, well, I mean, he probably didn't have a lot of hit points or something.
Well, neither of them did. That your hit points are based on what your origin is.
Yeah.
So Muffin kind of picked wrong. He picked the caster, which is your caster class, or so you'd think. And you kind of get the benefits for the caster stuff if you're bloodied. But you get a D6 of hit points. You got no con modifier, so you're never actually gaining more hit points as you level up starting out.
Okay.
So it doesn't really make it a difference which one of those you pick in the beginning, I don't think. Because the stats that you start with are really fucking low. If you pick the caster class, your intelligence is 14 and your wisdom is 13. Hmm. The brute, which is what I played, my wisdom was 12. So
what was your intelligence?
10. So
not too high. Needs to be lower.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. But that's you know, nothing had lower than 10, but nothing has higher than a 15.
Okay. So, is there a mechanic in the game to basically do a dodge roll?
There should be. There, I don't think there is. I can't say that no classes have that because I didn't look at all of them. You know, because you get it's just
it's available to all classes in the game.
Maybe it's a thing at fourth level. You just all get dodge. I know that the dodge ability, just like in 5e, is a thing, which, if I recall right, gives disadvantage to things that are attacking you. But that's what I would use it as. Just, you know, you're taking the dodge action. All right. You're just rolling around in circles. When you're done, when they attack you, you end up, you know, like on the other side of them, basically. When they attack you again, you end up back in your initial position. That's how it worked in the video game, right? Sort of roll in circles around them.
No, I mean, you just roll and then you stand back up. If you want to keep rolling around them, you can do that, but it depends on the boss or something.
Oh, okay. And
honestly, that's why I don't play any of those games.
Yeah, I've played a total of maybe 2 hours of Dark Souls 3. That's the extent of my knowledge of Dark Souls. I know they made this fucking game, the video games, to be so stupidly hard for no purpose other than to be difficult.
That is fine. The problem is you just dodge roll your way to victory.
Yeah. From what I've heard from people who have played the shit out of these games, you can play tanks. There might be the occasional boss here or there where you have to do that, but it's no, possible. No. To play
every boss requires it. I was actually watching something on Reddit where the guy basically opened his Elden Ring world to people to come in to invade him. And everyone would come into the world to invade him, find where he was, and then try to kill him. And his whole strategy was to dodge roll behind them. Like, first he would lure them into an alleyway. Then he would dodge roll behind them, stand so they couldn't get by them, drink some potions or whatever, and then use a shield to basically just breathe flame in front of them.
Okay.
And kill them eventually with that. And then you would see the people, the PvPers, panic and try to dodge roll all around to get like around him or over him or
right,
something.
But he's blocked him in the little corner.
Right. So, and that's just, the game is all dodge rolling. So I was actually very curious if the tabletop RPG had it. Cause
no, not really. Like I haven't seen anything remotely like that other than taking the dodge action. Which is, you know, the dodge actions, that's a D&D thing.
It shows how much of an old man I am. Back in my day, we didn't have dodge rolls. You just died.
Yep.
You played again. And there were no continues or save points. Your Nintendo shut off. You lost all the progress.
Yeah, unless it was like Tyson's Punch-Out, where it had a fucking code where you could restart at Super Macho Man. But yeah, a lot of the classes are pretty much straight out of D&D. I played the knight, which is just a fighter. I got to pick fighting style. I got second wind. At second level, I got action surge. There are a few differences along the way. Because there are no archetypes, but at fourth level, I got improved critical, which would crit on 19s. At like 17th level, it becomes on 18s. There's a few other things that are different.
That's cool.
Overall, though, like if you want just a fucking hack and slash game, and you don't want to branch outside of 5e too much, this is a good one. Like, we had a good time with it. We'll be playing it more, and I know there's going to be more to it than just what we've been doing. We're kind of in the starter dungeon. But.
Yeah, you let me know when you have to start dodge rolling to beat a boss, and then I'll tell you how terrible it is.
If I have to start dodge rolling to beat bosses, I may even tap out. Be like, fuck this game. I don't want
to. And I use my reaction to dodge roll.
Yep.
And you get multiple reactions, and you just have to use a multiple dodge roll to survive. I got to actually play D&D over the weekend. Well, not play, but I actually got the DM, since most of my group is no longer sick.
Oh, that's good. Well, that's only taking 3 weeks to get better.
Yeah. I did the first mission from the Keys of the Golden Vault. All
right.
Where they had to basically sneak into a museum and steal an emerald flame. And the book, it was something different. And in the book, it's actually an Elder's Horde that lives inside the gem.
Okay.
And it's going to hatch at midnight. So the group has to get it by midnight, or else the Elder's Horde is going to hatch out of this crystal and kill everybody. So I basically said that this is actually an egg of an Abashia.
Abashai.
Abashai, whatever. And they have to basically get it and bring it back to the NPC to basically make it so it can't hatch anymore.
Yeah.
And I let them go into the museum while it was still open, but the room where it was in was closed for the gala. And they had tickets and everything to the gala. So they kind of went in and they scoped the place out. And then they went back to the gala, back to the museum during the gala. And their idea was basically cause massive disturbance and then steal the MacGuffin and get out during the gala. Not do any more further recon in the gala or during the gala and then come back at night. They did talk about doing that, though.
Okay.
So I think that's where I messed up. I let them go into the museum first and you kind of look around. According to the book, it says the museum is closed to set up the gala. And that's
oops.
Their first time they can recon is actually at the gala. But it didn't make sense with, essentially, I make this museum be the House of Wonders in Waterdeep, like an offshoot of the temple and everything. And I just didn't feel like it would make sense for me to close down the museum before the gala.
Yeah.
So they got to scope it out, and then they were like, okay, we're going to break in during the gala, cause disturbances, and grab it and run. They also talked about dressing up as cultists to steal it, and they talked about, you know, coming back at during the middle of the night and stealing it that way, which is the intended way the book has you go. It says in there, if they try to steal it during the gala, they're going to have a bad time.
Yeah.
So what one of them does is my wife, she basically sabotages this animatronic allosaur and basically makes it go on a rampage.
All right.
And another person has a bottle of everlasting smoke.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And he basically uncorks it, and that's the cue to steal everything and kind of go out from there.
Yeah. The ever smoking bottle, I think, is what it's called.
Okay. So they pop it and just boom, 6-foot cloud of smoke immediately fills the area, and he corks it back in the next turn. My wife was already next to the control box for the allosaur, so she basically sets it up to go crazy, and it starts going crazy. So the nobles, the 20 nobles that were there, start basically trying to run out of the room because they're scared of the smoke, don't know what's happening. And when they run out to the staircase, here's this staircase that's covered in smoke. They can't see, heavily obscured, but there's an allosaurus in the way now. So they can't get down the stairs because the allosaurus is eating them. And they can't really like disperse anywhere else because they can't see the allosaurus is there to basically go, oh shit, we should run. They just know that there's something in this fog and the person in front of me is not moving. So I kind of like try to set that up. Like, you've kind of like made it so the one way they couldn't get out, they can't get out now.
Right.
I think the players were expecting the nobles to run out of the way, But it didn't make sense to me as the DM because the Allosaurus is there. So the ones that can see it that are like adjacent to it aren't going anywhere. They're trying to get away from the Allosaurus. So you kind of like to have like the nobles pushing back against the ones trying to push to get down the stairs.
I know if so, I hear, if I'm running through fucking smoke down some stairs and I hear something stomping around down below and screeching, I'm not fucking going that way.
So I basically created a traffic jam in the stairs and that made sense to me.
Yeah.
So they grabbed the MacGuffin. There's a little bit of like tussle with some guards. They were able to eventually get it out and chuck it out over the edge off the roof outside of the museum and have it land on the street. And we were already running late. So I kind of like quickly wrapped up the ending and was like, okay, we'll tell you what happens with the stone hitting the street next time.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know what I'm going to do. except maybe have one of my other players that wasn't there because he was sick, kind of be like a deus ex machina
down there to catch it.
Yeah, down there to catch it and just like walk away, because there's always that one thing in the heist movies that's not shown to the audience.
Yeah, did anyone know that they actually set up a wagon down there with straw in it.
Yeah,
like the whole thing was planned to throw it off the roof.
And that's honestly, I think that's the best answer. It's like, nope, yep. And he was there the entire time just waiting for it. So that's probably what I'll do. Because that just makes sense for the heist movie, you know?
Yeah, every heist movie has stuff like that. And I've always wanted to run a D&D game where the characters just pulled off heists. Like every game session is they get hired to pull off a new heist. Or hell, they may just want to pull it off themselves. You know,
honestly, this book is pretty much that.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool. Just heist after heist. I personally, I love heist movies.
Our friend Jeffrey Lightwood, he wrote the final one in there, mm-hmm. which is the level 11 heist, where you have to break into a genie's house and steal the Book of Darkness.
The Book of Vile Darkness.
Yeah, the Book of Vile Darkness. You have to steal that from the genie.
Good luck with that one. I mean, might be okay getting in there and getting it out, but then you have to deal with the Book of Vile Darkness.
Yeah. Well, now that it's been officially introduced into Dungeons & Dragons, I can start using it again.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was like one of the last things that came out for 4th edition was the Book of Vile Darkness. It was a whole book dedicated just to that.
Yeah. Well, 3rd edition actually has a Book of Vile Darkness, and it's all the stats of all the demon and devil lords and a lot of spells that are not intended for PC usage.
Yeah.
Lots of curse and badass evil magic items.
You know what? It doesn't actually have stats for what the book actually does. That's weird.
It may not end there, but I think I want to say I've seen it for 5e. Was it not in the DM's guide?
I don't think so.
I mean, to be fair, I've played so many editions that everything kind of overlaps, so I could even be thinking of the 3rd edition stuff.
Yeah. For the 4th edition, the Book of Vile Darkness was like all traps and stuff as well, too. And it was a really good book. Book of Vile Darkness.
Yeah, well, there's the actual existing copies for 3rd edition and 4th edition, but then there's the in-play version of it, which is a whole, yeah, because it's an artifact-level item. These 11th-level characters would be stealing from a genie's house.
It is in the DMG, okay.
Okay, yeah, because I don't know the stats or the effects of it, but I know it's an artifact-level item.
There's a lot of stats to it. You get random properties, ability score adjustments, spells to cast. Yeah, a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, but it's a very evil item. So cracking that book open. I mean, honestly, if you're playing a bunch of people on a heist who are stealing something that awesome and powerful, you know good and well there should be PvP after they obtain that item.
That's how it should end.
Somebody has to try to walk off with that thing. I can't imagine that going any other way.
So, if a Solar tears the book in two, it's destroyed for 1d100 years, and then it reforms in a dark corner of the multiverse. Cool.
Yeah. There's every artifact has a way to permanently get rid of it. What is, does it have that listed on there?
There's no permanent way to get rid of it.
Okay. I mean, hell, maybe there isn't.
There is a permanent way to get rid of it, which is if all evil in the multiverse is wiped out, the book turns to dust and is forever destroyed.
Yeah, okay. So there it is. There is a way. It's good luck, but it exists.
That's never going to happen.
No, no, absolutely not. But there it is. You have to get access to the Infinity Gauntlet first before you can do that.
Creature that's attuned to the book for 100 years can unearth a phrase hidden in the original text that, when translated to celestial and spoken aloud, destroys both the speaker and the book in a blinding flash of radiance. However, as long as evil exists in the multiverse, the book reforms in 1d10 times 100 years later. And then if all evil in the multiverse is wiped out, the book is turned to dust and forever destroyed. Neat. I like it.
I'm trying to think what is the celestial version of it? It should be right next to it.
Crap, I can't remember. The Book of Radiance or something like that?
Crap.
I was just had a campaign that had it in there.
Yeah,
And it was an MTG card too.
Yeah, it's kind of annoying me that I can't.
Book remember. Of Exalted Deeds.
Book of Exalted Deeds. Yeah, that's another good one to mess around with.
Yeah, there was I was running Adventures League, and the MacGuffin person was like this 10-year-old girl that read the Book of Exalted Deeds and didn't like die instantly, and decided to go into Avernus to save a bunch of people.
As a 10-year-old girl, okay.
As a 10-year-old girl, yeah. So yeah.
Was that that was an Adventure League thing? Was that something you came up with, or was that something somebody wrote it?
Somebody wrote it. Yep.
Huh. Interesting concept.
It was if the child was set up early in the story, but she disappeared after a couple of adventures and then came back out of nowhere, okay, with having read the Book of Exalted Deeds. So what the hell? Like, they didn't. If the story was you bringing her to Baldur's Gate and then bringing her to the place where the Book of Exalted Deeds was and then helping her read the book, and you had some connection to this girl other than being some kind of like MacGuffin item that shows up out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It would have been a lot better.
This sounds like it was a terrible plan for Adventure League, but this could be a pretty awesome campaign that somebody could put together.
Essentially, at the time, Adventure League was hired one main story artist or story writer, and he would hire other people to write little tidbits along the way. But there wasn't any consistency to the main story threads between each adventure.
Yeah. So the main guy probably was the one who wrote the little girl and then wrote it that she reads it and then continues on into Avernus. But in between there, you just throw in all these random adventures.
Yeah, like at first she's like the go-to NPC for the first mission, and then like the very next one she's 16, I think, and no longer leading the caravan to Baldur's Gate. Then she's 10 later on and disappears.
Yeah. I remember you telling me about this. Well, it was last year at some point when we were discussing this on the podcast, but yeah, that's just it makes more sense now that we're talking about it again to me.
Yeah, it was just weird. Overall, the story getting in there and finding the lost souls that were trapped in Avernus is an interesting premise. That story is good. It just didn't have the key pieces to go from one to the other. And they all wiped anyways. Don't jump off of cliffs.
Yep. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So speaking of lost souls in Avernus, have you seen the... have you seen any of the gameplay for Diablo 4? Or I don't know if there's any out or not, but I know there are people who are in the beta test for it, and I've seen little things popping up on the internet about it.
I have not. I am still on the fence whether or not I will buy it.
But it's Diablo, man. You've played all of them.
I have played all of them, but I don't know if that game is going to be good or not.
I mean, I can't.
Diablo and Diablo 2 were created by Blizzard North.
Yeah.
And that company no longer exists. Those people no longer exist. Diablo 3, somebody
snapped their finger and all those people are just gone. They don't exist anymore.
They don't work for Blizzard anymore.
Yeah, that's fair.
And then Diablo 3 came out and was just a microtransaction hell.
I've never microtransactioned anything in that game.
You don't remember the real money auction house?
I never used it.
It doesn't matter if you used it or not. It was the main draw of the game and how you got stronger.
I never used it, so it wasn't microtransaction hell. Like, the fact is, I was able to play through the game just fine without it.
And then they create the seasons with Diablo 3.
Yeah.
And those are fun, but it's just the same game over and over again.
Well, sure. All Diablo games are just the same game over and over again.
But I played Diablo 2 for like a decade. Mm. I played Diablo 3 for maybe a couple hundred hours. It was still good. It just wasn't like the best. I still like the story, but they quickly stopped telling the story. So then Diablo Immortal and all that shit.
No, yeah, I'm not even. Now that one, that's designed to be a microtransaction hell, and I can't argue against that one.
So now with Diablo 4, and the idea that you have to pay to unlock different seasons, which will unlock more of the story, so you can play through the whole game, is an immediate pass for me. I'm already paying for a season pass for Overwatch. I'm not paying for a season pass for a game. I'll just read the wiki and the story that happens, and I'll watch the FMVs on YouTube, and I'll call it a day.
Yeah, I already know I'm going to buy it because that's just the kind of person I am, and I love Diablo. I don't partake really in microtransactions much, as you well know. So if I can buy the game for $60, because that's probably what it'll cost, and then play through the entirety of the story that's there on release day, and then if I can play multiplayer with my friends for a while, like, I know me well enough, I'll probably put 3 months or so into Diablo, and then maybe I'll pick it up again 2 years down the road. But I'm not too concerned over the microtransactions of it, as long as it's not going to fully affect me and the way I play the game.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a wait and see. Like, you always have to wait and see.
So the base edition is $70.
Ugh.
The digital deluxe edition is $90. The ultimate edition is $100.
Well, I don't care about any of that. But 70's pushing it, man. 60's rough enough.
Yeah.
Like, I've been wanting to play the new Harry Potter game. I can't even bring myself to fucking drop 60 on that one. And I know I'll get a lot of hours in that.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just not worth it anymore.
I'm
going to make my own games with blackjack and hookers.
Fuck yeah, blackjack and hookers. That's the way to do it. That's what we're going to do. We're going to go LARPing this weekend with Punch and Pie. Won't be any blackjack and hookers there, but Punch and Pie is pretty good.
I'm not ready for a LARP.
It's been a long time. I haven't been in 3 years.
Yeah, you got to buy a season battle pass to play Diablo 4. No.
Yeah.
With the $100 thing, you get it for free.
Good job, Blizzard. Good job. It's Wizards of the Coast in video game form.
It kind of is.
Yeah, no, it really is. The certain companies, they just get too big, and then they just stop caring and just squeeze money out of everybody. Your shit ain't that good. We got other options.
So back to D&D for our last topic.
Yes.
I posted a funny little comic in the podcast chat. And there is a webcomic called Tales from Alderwood, which is like loosely based D&D comic about their characters or whatever playing through. I haven't read through the comic, but in the comic, the main heroine has a small little absolutely round owl called Cream Buff that is her mage familiar. Okay. Uh-huh. during the comic storyline, they're fighting off some bandits, and a bandit grabs Cream Puff and spikes it against the wall, immediately killing it, sending her familiar back into the realm of the owls.
Okay.
And not until like almost a year's worth of comics later were she able to actually stop and take a breath and resummon her familiar. And what was really interesting about this is that they actually put weight to this person, this heroine, and her attachment to the familiar.
Yeah.
Like they're best of friends. Do any of your players treat the familiars that way, or are they just 10 gold trap finders?
Yes and no.
Okay.
So let me back it up a lot here. Okay. I started in second edition. In second edition, familiars took money to summon. They gave you actual benefits for summoning them, not just I can see through its eyes and I can cast spells through it. Like you got stat bonuses, you got other stuff. But if it died, you lost constitution.
Oof.
So it was a choice that you had to make. And I played a wizard for a long time in second ed, and I had familiar. So like it meant something to have that familiar. And it's not just a simple if it dies, you just resummon and get the same one. No, this is a real living creature. You know, this thing, when it dies, it dies. Then third edition comes along, and it wasn't as cool. I don't remember all the effects of it, but I remember it just, depending on what type of familiar you had, you got a different bonus. And if it died, you could kind of bring it back, and you didn't lose constitution. Like, there wasn't any weight. There wasn't any real drawbacks per se to losing it. So 5e, it's just kind of a joke. Oh, you're just summoning some fey creature that pretends to look like whatever the hell you want. It doesn't really do anything for you other, like I said, see through its eyes, cast spells through it. When you buff yourself, you buff it. Everybody I know, for the most part, uses a familiar. They just kind of keep them hidden until they actually need them.
Yeah.
I can only really think of one person in our playgroup who used a familiar regularly, and that's how they always were. And that familiar died multiple times. No, there were two of them. Muffin also used one in the Oriental campaign that we played, and Muffin's a great role player. He played it up. His familiar died multiple times. Multiple times, and every time it died, he would summon it up. He would apologize profusely to it. He would then go out and spend actual in-game money buying it the treats that it liked.
that's pretty much so. Like in the comic, you see her basically cast the fine familiar spell, and as she's doing that, she whispers, "You know, please, please give her back to me." And then I guess someone else, like a fan of the comic, drew the thing that I initially saw, which is basically Cream Puff showing up in the realm of the owls and just kind of like picking off the fact that it just died. And it just kind of like plops itself on the ground and sits in front of the great mother owl. That's like this massive owl, like a fat chocobo,
yeah,
in a tree, and just waiting for like to get summoned back. And it just takes forever, and then like you see the spell get weaved through the sky, and then like the whispers hits the great mother owl, and she opens up one eye and zaps him back, Cream Puff that is, zaps him back to the realm. And it's just kind of neat that the community kind of went out and made that and kind of like brought it all together. But I haven't had anyone actually use familiars at all in any of my campaigns or stories. I don't know why.
The benefits are very limited. They don't really give you a whole lot. So,
Yeah. When you look at fine familiar just from a mechanical standpoint, it's useless.
Yeah.
But
we didn't even talk about it last week because they have fine familiar. It was in the new UA, and it's more garbage than it already was. Like it matters. I don't even want to dig it up right now. We can talk about it on next week's podcast, but it's just bad. Like it's just more of the same trivial nonsense that makes familiars not fucking matter.
That's a shame. Because I feel like they should matter, but they should be part of the character kind of as well too. And if they just want to keep things bland mechanic, you know, then they're doing the great job. But
yeah,
I don't know. There needs to be more weight put to them.
I agree. And as a DM, you always have that option. You can change everything up. But I personally would like to see it changed up in the core mechanics, not have to do it myself.
Yeah. And that's like a can of worms I'm not going to open here. But we complain a lot about, like, there should be X or should be Y or should be Z. And a lot of it just comes from, like, that should be what's being published, because that is the core mechanics everyone uses.
Yes,
I can make my own. Yes, I can go to DM's Guild and possibly find that. But why should I?
Yeah, I don't have
when I should be able to just to go to the book, go to the actual core materials and get what I want right from there.
Yep.
I don't know.
And companies like Paizo, they try to give that to you. Company like WotC, ugh. But hey, at least WotC is going to be able to put out stuff here soon without having to pay for anything. Thanks.
Well,
thanks, AI.
I'm going to chat GPT my own Find Familiar rules. That's what I'll do.
Well, that's how we're opening the next podcast.
Type it in right now.
Well, I think I'm leaving before you get to that point. Bye, guys. Right. Bye, Craig.
Bye, everybody.